Hello, this is Peter from Peter, Bjorn and John.
And this is John from Peter, Bjorn and John.
And okay, can we explain now that we did kill Bjorn and how it happened?
We didn't kill him, we just froze him and sent him...
Michael Jackson cryogenics!
Yeah, we sent him in an icebox to... Where was it we sent him?
Romania.
Who made the decision, the final decision, which producer made the decision on Romania?
That was who was? No, it's actually Pontus Winberg who did that.
Okay, so let's do this backwards. So you took 5 years to make a record. So what? I mean, let's do it the opposite way, because everybody's, oh, you took 5 years. Why is that? Yeah. So let's do it the opposite way, right? Let's do, why didn't you take 5 years to make a record?
Yeah, of course. I was thinking about Stanley Kubrick, who took his time for each project. So we're maybe you're gonna trick us to not be Stanley Kubricks. We're gonna be like Woody Allen's,
treating the album like 12 singles. Now it really is about every song being equal. It's not only about singles, right? But it's about all the influences, all the things you love, and then saying, what if we made an album that's literally for the streaming age, where people don't listen to albums anymore?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, we in the songwriting, we really wanted to, as you said, like focus the songwriting, keep the songs short and energy packed or like interesting, but also emotional and you know, well written on all levels. And I think that's was the approach we took with the production too, like bringing in different people and highlighting every song in different ways. But I think that's why it works as an album for me, anyway. That's why I don't get bored. Like, there's no long boring song and like, you know, but if it works for the streaming people too, that's great.
It's, everything is so thought out, and people have to have a plan, and if you're gonna go with this single, it's the only one. And so we maybe hope we inspire people to be more spontaneous, as it was before. And as you remember, in the 80s, it could be anything on the top 10. It could be a Bon Jovi track or a synth track. I mean, it was more diverse.
It was Gary Numan next to Bon Jovi.
Yeah, so that's what in this album, I think there's all kinds of inspiration from both Bon Jovi and Gary Numan and ABBA. So it's we hope people in the future will be more spontaneous and that the radio will be more diverse again. In Sweden, it's very... It's a little box of...
So when you talk about making a pop statement, I'm going down the right path there to a certain extent.
Yeah, we talked about that. It's hard to define pop, I guess, because it's different for everyone. But like back in the day, a pop song could be the Evergreens, you know, like the Gershwin or Rodgers and Hammerstein. I mean, it's something that people like to hum along to and where they remember the melody. That's what I see as a pop song. So, I mean, and not all pop songs are popular. So I don't know what the other word would be. If you do something that is not rock and it's definitely a melodic like song and it's not popular, I don't really know what to call that, because there's a lot of like unpopular.
A good song. How about a good song?
Yeah, but a good song doesn't have to be like that pop format with the chorus and
have to have a middle eight every time.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like if you do a really well-written pop song and it's not popular, what's the name for that?
Good. You know what? Let's try. By the end of this conversation,
unpopular.
Right. We make right. That's your new thing. We make unpopular songs. I think that could be your new. That's your new unpopular songs. But you know what is interesting, and I'm going to go out of order because we got there, which is the whole concept of you saying that these songs would be great for covers. Now, it's a really fascinating thing, because whether it's a Bob Dylan song, you know, you could pick anybody that we love, Paul Simon, right? All the real songwriters, that then people cover them, and only two things happen. One, people go, how dare you cover like a Rolling Stone? How dare you cover Bridge Over Troubled Water? How can you do that? But then Aretha Franklin covers Bridge Over Troubled Water and people go, oh my gosh, right? And it goes to number one a second time. What is a filter for writing a unpop song or a pop song that's good enough to be a cover? And how do you know that it's good enough to be a cover. That's a really interesting and tough thing to give yourself as a proposal, isn't it?
Yeah, but in yeah, but in the past we have made like albums with punk rock songs or a crowd song or like a very indie pendant sounding pop song. But now when we wanted to do this ultra unpop thing, we worked in a room like with three acoustic guitars and we tried out the songs in till the till we could play them on the acoustic guitar as you would do in a pub or something like that. And we would, all the songs would work like that, like one guitar, one voice, so should still feel like a good song. You didn't need the production on it.
When you come up with Ingrid, and you know, it's like Andy Warhol's Factory, it's saying, you know what, it's just so much more fun to take control, because then control gives you the freedom to actually do what you want to do. And, you know, and it is hard when you've had a huge hit and you've been on a, you know, a good label to say, you know what, we're going to start from scratch, right? A little insane, but in the end, it's that when you really think about the stuff we love, whether it is Andy Warhol or Manchester or Madchester or whatever, that's exactly what they all did, right?
Yeah.
So you're following in legendary footsteps.
Yeah, that's what we always do. We everyone is building on a tradition of different sorts or up a tradition. So that's definitely what we do. And it makes it easier, I mean, in a lot of ways, because you cut away the middleman and you kind of, you know, go direct to the source. Of course, if something goes wrong, it's harder to blame other people.
You can't blame the A&R guy because you are the A&R guy.
Yeah, that might be the tricky one. I haven't figured that out yet. I just have to blame John.
The Mr. Epworth, you know, we do know that he is known for certain sounds and getting certain things, and certain producers definitely can do that anywhere, and other producers say, nope, I want my equalizer. So was that the reason you went to the church for that particular group of tracks?
I think he wanted us there. He wanted us to come over. And he hadn't been in the church for a long time either. I think he was just finding his feet there. Like, he had a smaller studio before. So
you like the test case?
Nah, I don't know. I think he'd done some stuff, but he hadn't been there so long, maybe half a year or something. But I mean, he just wanted us to be there in person, because some of the other people we did it like this modern hip-hop cut and paste thing where you send stuff across the ocean. And obviously going, and then there was some producers in Stockholm that we met and hang out with, like Patrick Berger. But he wanted us to come there, and London isn't that far away. It's like a short plane ride. And it was just great to hang out there. And I think especially a couple of those songs really like took another turn and completely transformed there. Maybe because of the big room or because of him, and because we were actually, you know, being hands-on produced by him, maybe more than someone sending an email and, you know, talking about EQ.
Some songs were made in, like, I'm not kidding, 12, 13, almost 20 different versions with different styles. And so we were searching for something. We knew that we wanted to make something, as you said before, as Thriller, Michael Jackson. And that album also have some different styles. I mean, so it's a diverse album. But we came to a level. We did the songwriting to perfection, I think, together with Patrick and then on our own. But then we reached 80% of the productions. We sort of hit the wall, because we wanted not even the songs to be on the top shelf. We wanted the production to be like pop song of today. We couldn't master it. We can make pretty awesome indie pop records and we can produce them themselves, but not that last level. You know, as they say, the last 10% is as much time and energy to do that as the first 90%. So that's why the end part took so long, because we first had to figure out who to call. And also their time was not like...
Hi, I'm available right now.
No.
Can you come over?
Absentee. Yeah. Yeah. That's what happened. Paul Epworth, they had some good tea there and some falafels.
Oh, I have no doubt. If you don't have good tea in England, you better leave. You talk about Tamla Motown and a factory. And it's so interesting, because how many different, you know, producers, but there was that big group of session musicians, right? And there was a certain level of songwriting and stuff. now that you've done this, is this a comfort zone? Not that you'd make the same record 24 times, but certainly you've had some interesting learning, and it sounds like you, what I hear from the two of you is that you love the results, that you're proud, and it doesn't sound like you were as proud of, say, the record before it to a certain extent.
Tough one. It's a tough one. It's a different sort of record. Like, I think that record is really, really good too. It's a different kind of record. And you want to reflect something different. I think, as we were touching upon, like, songwriting-wise, I think this is probably the best or most even record we made. And we learned a lot from it. So I think the next one will be quicker. And, you know, we have a sort of... And I think now we want to do something just by ourselves the next time again, you know. Make it quicker. And we looked at all these producers and how they work, and everyone wants to get the best results possible, but they all work in different ways. So then you learn there's no like wrong way or right way. It's just, you know, it's trial and error and getting the right thing, you know, the right excitement.
So the fact that ABBA recorded in the Ingrid space is cool as anything. And now that I'm thinking what you talk about and what I love, I call it a Tootsie Roll Pop. It's candy coated on the outside, and on the inside it's dark and gooey and chocolatey, right? and these are the songs that we all live for. Every great pop song, when you really listen to it, is super dark. So then I'm listening to Waterloo, right? And it's like, oh, happy, happy. No, it's not. No, it's not. It's like, I'm gonna die as I'm happy as all get out. So you love that stuff, don't you?
I love the word twist. And also in Sweden, there's a candy called twist with some paper on it, and you get it open. It's right. And I think about, every time I say that word, I think about this candy. But that's the same with the pop song. I think every good pop song has a twist. But it can be in the lyric, the combination of dark and light, and then also like a sound, like some weird thing going on in the production. So I think you need that element. And maybe we being Swedish, since we're living in the darkness, so it's weird because it's in some way it's easier for us to write something with a bit melancholic or some darkness or some anger. You have to like force yourself, how am I going to write a happy song?
I mean, I would actually really love the opposite as well. Like a song that sounds really dark and melancholic. And then the lyric is then the lyric is content and like I'm happy because I mean,
so this is the unpop album.
Yeah, but it's developed it here. It's a good idea because I mean it's nothing wrong with like a happy lyric. Actually, if you can manage to do a happy song that is not like too like bland or whatever, that's much harder, and it's a great thing, you know, because sometimes we are happy.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and what it is two of your songs on the outside, and then songs by others in between.